Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion.
This is Auto Line After Hours with John McElroy and Gary Vasilash, episode 324 for March 18 of 2016. Domino's Pizza, Pepperoni, and Cars. Watch Auto Line After Hours live at autoline.tv every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 p.m. Pacific. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Auto Line in iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube.
Hey, Gary, it's great to be back on the show, and it's you and me on the show.
It has been a while. It's right. Been a while. You were out last week. I was out driving the new Pacifica minivan last week, but here we are,
and we had Scott Burgess do a pretty good job of hosting the show for us.
Funny.
We should let everybody know, too, that we got Jeff Green from Bloomberg News. Great having you here, Jeff.
Good to be here. It's been a while.
It's been a while, but it's, good to have you back. And, of course, we got to let everybody know our special guest today is Russell Weiner. He's the president of Domino's USA, Domino's Pizza. And, Russell, great to have you on AutoLine this
Thanks so much for having
after
me.
Hours. Yeah. So we got to get right to this vehicle. You guys have come out with, I guess it's the first pizza chain ever with its own pizza delivery vehicle?
Yeah, we like to say it's the first purpose-built vehicle made for the sole purpose of delivering pizza.
And it's obviously a Chevrolet Spark.
I don't know. It's obviously, to me, a Domino's DSP.
Yeah.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I mean, that was part of it was super important for us. You know, we took this process really seriously. I mean, we spent probably 4 or 5 years on it, several million dollars, worked with all the folks you'd want to work with kind of in the industry, because at the end of the day, this couldn't be for us, you know, a fill-in-the-blank car with just a bunch of stickers on it. It had to be purpose-built. And the example I give people is all the time is, God forbid your house is on fire, right? You call the fire department and they come with a 1990-something-something and a fire hose.
Mm-hmm.
Garden hose. Right. I mean, that's not what you want. And so the same thing here. I mean, if you're going to take it seriously, what do you need? Well, I'll tell you what you don't need. You don't need a bunch of seats. You just need the driver's seats. You need room for pizza. You need a place to keep the pizza warm. And you need it to look like it truly is built for Domino's. And there is, there was a Chevy Spark in there somewhere. But from the tires to the front fascia, all throughout the vehicle, it's a Domino's car.
So the 4 to 5 years, I mean, walk us through the genesis to this car being here in the studio.
And wait one sec. Slide your mic up just a little bit higher.
Okay.
Because we want everybody to hear this. And so, back to Gary's question.
Oh, so take you through the time. Well, you know, it was interesting. I originally thought of the idea because I saw a company called Local Motors speak at an event.
The 3D printing car company.
Yeah, well, this is even before they were doing 3D.
So crowdsourcing of vehicle
designs. Exactly, crowdsourcing of vehicles. And I was thinking to myself, you know, but I did, you know, whether it's the people who deliver packages, the fire department, everyone who specializes in an area has their, you know, their vehicle that does that. And so, but nothing exists on the market. And again, we didn't want a clown car. And so the thought was, well, what about if we could make the business case by getting this crowdsourcing to give us a car that, you know, would have to be built? And so interestingly enough, we really went for it. I mean, there was a TV commercial about 4 years ago with our CEO in it, where he was in a regular car with our delivery drivers, and he asked them, hey, what would you want to see in a car? And some people, I think, said rocket boosters, which are not in this one. But, you know, ovens. And so we committed 4 or 5 years ago in that commercial that we were going to make something, which I think, you know, not a lot of companies do. And so it's so much more satisfying 5 years later when we have it. And so, anyway, it started with this crowdsourcing through Local Motors. We had a bunch of fantastic designs.
But so wait, you had a contest, a design contest.
Yeah, the contest was kicked off by that commercial, right? So my boss in the car, people saying, I want rocket boosters. He said, well, maybe that's not a great idea, but go online and help us. So we got a lot of consumer input. And then through Local Motors and their global community, we spent, you know, several months kind of going back and forth, getting a great external design getting an internal design that was purposely made for, you know, for pizza. And then it was done. Now, I have lots of sympathy for the car companies because I had no idea
what it takes
to build a car from scratch.
Yeah.
So I saw that price tag and quickly realized that, okay, we had a, pun intended, car joke, shift gears, right? And figure out how to get the spirit of the winning design inside and out.
And we should say, up on the screen now, Carmen's been running through
design
finalists.
Yeah, and you can see, you know, you can see in some of the designs pieces of what we've got today. Really easy access. I think the one she's got up here now shows really, really easy access because all you need is for the driver to get inside and out. You can see the idea of being purpose-built for pizza, taking all the seats out. And so there are elements from every part of it that we wanted to hold sacred. And then the question was, how do you bring it into a vehicle that already exists, still stay true, but, you know, but be unique.
But not spend hundreds of millions of dollars tooling up a car
on
your own.
No, what I said, I'd much rather get 80% there and spend that money getting the cars out. And so we're very lucky to have, work with Roush. Off of the Chevy Spark platform, bring all these ideas and make it happen. Ken Baker, who you probably know.
I know Ken very well, though I haven't seen Ken in years, but great product development guy, spent all his career at General Motors.
I mean, I cannot tell you what we would have done without him, because he let us, you know, it's interesting, someone with all that great experience, but he was kind of the father of the electric vehicle. And so even back then, he was thinking forward. And so it's so great to have someone who can think forward but also be grounded in what can and can't be done and had the gravitas to tell me when I was being stupid, you know, for doing these things.
So Ken was the car guy, you were the pizza guy.
I was the kind of pizza marketing guy. He was the car guy. And the push back and forth between what I wanted to do and what really could get done in real life between the two of us, Local Motors, and eventually Roush, who had to take the design and make it real, was really fantastic. I think that's why we have what we have today.
It was kind of interesting when we talked about this earlier, the amount of safety. I mean, it pretty much has to be a functioning car. This isn't just a gimmick. This has to be road tested and road safe. I mean, how difficult was it to make the modifications? Maybe you can talk a little bit about the modifications you made into the Spark, but how difficult is it to take a car like that, make all those modifications, and not introduce some sort of safety issue?
It is, yeah. I mean, we deliver a million pizzas every day. All right, so this thing is
that's a lot of pizza.
It's a lot, and you know, the average store, about a third of its deliveries, a store that has this car would be, you know, in this vehicle, and so it's going to be on the road all the time. You know, people ask me a lot, hey, why didn't you look at battery operated? I mean, it's not meant to be show car. This car works, and it's got to be on all day, and that's part of you know why we have what we have. But yeah, we only, not that pizza's not important, but we did take the airbag out for the passenger side, even though there's pizza there. We figured, okay. But short of that, all the other airbag, we couldn't mess with it at all, because otherwise, you have to retest it. We crash test it. I mean, we've crash tested this, but you'd have to really, you know, certify crash test it. So what the most interesting piece was because this is a very safe car. I mean, they did a fantastic job on the Spark, is that the airbags that come up from the side, how do you let them come out from the side and, God forbid, there's an accident? Now with that pizza oven there, without sending, because we have a real warming oven that keeps the pizza warm to 140 degrees.
Real pizza oven in there.
Yes, there is a pizza oven in there. How do you make it, right, but you have to have a pizza oven. It's a pizza car. Otherwise, it's just a car that you put pizza in versus a pizza car. But, you know, we didn't want you couldn't have the airbag come and, God forbid, decapitate the person driving it, because it takes the oven forward. So there was a lot of work keeping all the safety features, but keeping them and making sure the modifications didn't interfere with the safety features.
Yeah. So go back to the oven. How does that all work?
Well, are we ready to go on the
oven? Yeah, let's.
Yeah, all right, Ronnie. So
so we got Ronnie here to actually show what's going on.
Fresh hot pizza.
All right.
Yeah.
So pizza's always...
Oh, my God, that's steaming hot.
Yeah,
it's been in the oven.
Oh, see, we have a deal this week. I don't know when this is going to end.
Here,
but if you want to buy some pizza, we have a good deal.
You have 50% off?
The pizza's warm because, I don't know, do you want to get up and...
Wow. Come on.
Oh, you're going to
eat
the pizza?
You're not going to bring this pizza out. How do I know this is really real?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Oh, wow, that's a Hawaiian. That's a really good pizza.
Okay.
Well, so now that they're panning in, what you can see is we wanted to make this... Again, this is not a clown car. This is a serious car. So people like Ronnie, what are they worried about when they're delivering a pizza? One is it's got to be accessible. And so here we are. We have three pizzas. How does he get to it easy? He doesn't want to have to open up the door and slide it across. So you see he has a key fob there. Mm-hmm. Key fob opens it from far away, and then he can access it. Oh, there. Oh, good. You did your nails. That's good. All right. And then inside, what you could see, it's well lit,
mm-hmm.
because what happens, most of our deliveries are at night, so how can he see, what's inside? Down at the bottom of the oven is a warming element. You can see the grills on top of that, so it heats to about 140 degrees, keeps the pizza hot. And if it was dark out, what you'd see is there's a puddle light that comes off the bottom. Domino's logo, of course.
Of course.
But, the reason that that's there is, again, at night, this is a functional vehicle. What are our drivers need to worry about? How do I see how to get to the house? And so that light helps there. So all the stuff, what I tell people, that it's fun and it's functional. It's really a little bit of both.
All right, so this pizza really is hot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
And it's been, I don't know how long it's been, but it's been a while since it's been made.
So what is the temperature that this oven operates at? I mean, you're not baking pizzas in it.
Obviously. No, the pizza's fully made beforehand.
Mm-hmm. This just keeps it warm.
It just keeps it warm. And the heating element's 140 degrees.
Mm-hmm. Has there been any interest now that this, do you have like some sort of a corner, a patent that no one else can have a warming oven in their car? Or can Roush now outfit a Ford Fiesta with a warming oven and it can be the Little Caesars car or something?
I would tell anyone who wants to do this that it ain't that easy. So I'm not as worried about that. That said, we're protected as much as you can be protected today. So people always find a way around it. But, yeah, I think it's my first patent. My mother could be proud of me now. I actually have a...
You have a patent on this?
Yeah.
So you personally have a patent.
Well, my name somehow ended up on it, though
What is the patented portion of this vehicle?
Oh, we should actually get the exact wording to see how important that is to me. But it's, it's all about having a warming, an oven in the vehicle and mm-hmm. how it's constructed and accessed. It's more of a design patent than...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How'd you guys end up with Roush?
How not?
Yeah. No, that's a good way to put it.
No,
true.
I mean...
They can do anything.
They can... we wanted to... Like I said, we were serious about this the whole time. And we needed someone who could do a few things. Take the dream and make it a reality. Make the reality to scale. And then help us create a network around the country that could service it. I mean, this thing is on the road all the time. So if the base spark... Anything from the base spark got hurt or needed fixing, we needed a place to go. You couldn't have to drive this 300 miles to get it fixed. But also, we needed to have the accessories so that, folks can go to their local Chevy dealer, and if they need a new spark side mirror, it will be there. But you know what? If they need a new Domino's fascia, because God forbid someone backed into them, because our guys never get into accidents, they can get that there too. So we have a full network, supply network, where folks who have the vehicle, our franchisees, can go to their nearest Chevy dealer.
Roush must have been working on the Google autonomous bubble car at the same time they were working on yours. Did you ever get a chance to see the Google car when you went to check up on your project?
I'm not sure what you're talking about.
Okay. Yeah. Either that or you're a great liar.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I remember right, the initial plan for this car was for 25 or 30? I mean, what were you thinking when you originally decided how many of these you were going to put out?
Well, we asked ourselves, we knew we wanted to do this because we felt like as a pizza company, as the first company that delivered pizza...
Is this true?
First national company to deliver pizza. We invented the heat wave bag, which is what you saw that bought in. Mm-hmm. This box here, which is the non-crushable box that kind of we invented. And we were thinking it's been a while since we brought innovation, to delivery. And so the question to us was, how many do you need to make it real? And, you know, you had some people say, hey, you're just going to make one. And we, oh, no, you can't just have one. You have to have these out there. So our goal was 50, and we created tooling and stuff to make 50. And fortunately, there was a lot higher demand than that. And really the thing limiting us now is just a couple things. One is we didn't make tooling to make, you know, hundreds and hundreds of vehicles. And then, as you know, the spark has changed. And so we would have to do some retooling if we wanted to make more.
But what's the feedback from your franchisees?
Yeah. We can ask Ronnie, but it's been really positive. So we have, you know, well over 100 on the road, and we'll be updating that with more soon. So keep your eyes out.
So the 100 of these cars are rolling around the United States in various markets?
There will be more, yeah.
And you've got, what, 5,000 stores just in the U.S.?
Yeah.
Could it be one day they all have their own delivery vehicle?
Well, that what we would need to have happen, and we're testing it right now, is what's the consumer response to it? It's a purpose-built vehicle. So are our franchisees more productive? Are they going to want to invest? The cool thing is this is not marketing money. These are independent operators who are using their own money because they think it's going to make their business better.
Mm-hmm.
And so it does. You know, we'll be looking at maybe making some more. And so we actually have, if folks are interested, obviously you can order pizza from us. But even if you don't want to order pizza, you go to the DXP website, and what you'll see is a map of where all the cars are around the country. And then if there's not one near you, you can vote to make sure that the guy near you or the gal near you actually has one. And so
have you had feedback from
there you go.
From people who have these vehicles that, I mean, usually when the pizza delivery guy comes, you know, he's just like, yeah, you want your pizza and
ham
and just goodbye sort of thing. I mean, that people are actually going, look at that. What a great looking vehicle.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. A lot of people on the street almost think it's a ice cream truck. They just think they can come up and the guy, you know, we're going to be selling tons of pizza out of it. No, it's great. I mean, it really is. You know, when it's parked in someone's driveway, we're no longer really bringing the pizza to the door because they all want to come out and see the vehicle.
So you got a home run, really. It sounds like.
I don't know. There's a lot of things we need to test.
Mm-hmm. How long has it been in the market right now?
We started getting on the road in, like, November.
Okay, and so, but you've just recently started doing television advertising about the car,
too. The TV broke in January. The TV, the reception to the TV, and I think, you know, I mean, as car guys, I think you know that people respond. Oh, there you go. There's a TV spot. People respond to kind of breakthrough ideas. And, you know, certainly, this is not going to solve for world peace, but you know the fact that a little pizza company would set out to actually make its own pizza vehicle because it's delivering hot pizza is so important. It really actually was. It's amazing how people have reacted to the commercials.
Okay, we've got questions coming in from the audience right now. Rick Lauterbow wants to know: is it the heater, the oven? Is it propane, electric, 12 volt, 110? What is it?
Well, the secret sauce, it's actually the seat warmer from the seat that we've taken out.
Is so that right?
And it warms to 140 degrees.
Unbelievable.
Because remember, what you need to do, I mean, this is what I've learned.
Yeah.
So much about making cars.
Yeah.
I'm going to stick to pizza. Much easier. But I had dreams in the beginning, okay, we're going to keep the Coke cold, and we're going to have a cooler, we're going to have a real heater, and we're going to have this and that, and... Well, all that stuff drains batteries. All that stuff hurts the car. I mean, so what you can and can't do, you know, is very, very limited. And so we knew we wanted to be able to keep it warm. We knew we had a heat wave bag that keeps it pretty warm anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we were throwing out all these front seats. By the way, there are a bunch of front seats available for Chevy Sparks if anyone wants one for their living room. Yeah, and so that's what we did. So it's just rewired.
Cool. Mike Ma wants to know, how many pizzas can this vehicle carry, and how long can they keep the pizzas warm?
The car itself can hold over 80 pizzas.
Yeah. But not all in the oven?
No. The oven itself is probably about 6 to 8 pizzas.
Okay.
And, you know, I can promise you they'd stay warm. I can't tell you how good they'd be after a while, but yeah, those 8 pizzas will stay warm.
Okay, Jonathan wants to know, is Domino's a franchise? Here's somebody who clearly has not heard of Domino's.
Domino's is a franchise. Yeah. We actually have many more franchise stores than we do corporate.
And you're what, the largest pizza deliverer in the world?
We're the largest pizza delivery chain. Yeah, from a delivery pizza perspective, yeah.
And you're in how many markets?
Oh, we're getting close to 100.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Armin wants to know, how many miles do you expect to put on these vehicles a year?
That's part of what we want to see, to be honest, and how it holds up. And the good news, Armin, is we got through the winter. I think folks were wondering how it handled. It handles great front-wheel drive and all that kind of stuff. And so now it's just lots of stop and go. And that's what we also needed. I mean, think about the average car and think about this car. This car gets turned on and off, I mean, with every delivery, right? And so we needed to make sure that the starter works, the brakes, a lot of local stuff, the brakes need to work. And so, you know, the type of car we were looking for and the features that we needed, you know, we're a little bit different. And so we'll see how it responds to the wear and tear, but so far, so great.
And one last question. How will individual Domino's stores take care of the maintenance of these vehicles?
Well, the good thing is they all have the base Chevy guaranteed.
So take it to any Chevy dealer, pretty much. Unless the oven's got a problem.
Yeah.
And they probably know how to work on seat heaters.
Well, yeah, so the base Chevy components are covered by the Chevy warranty. And then if any of the DXP things have issues, again, while we went through Roush, the dealers have been trained how to actually fix the DXP features. So what they would do in that case is order an oven from Roush and put in the oven.
How long has Domino's been delivering pizzas?
Oh, we were the first major delivery company in 1960.
1960?
1960.
And DXP, where'd you come up with that name for the car?
Well, we call our delivery folks delivery experts. And, you know, this is really an honor to them. So DXP stands for delivery expert. Because we felt like if you truly were a delivery expert, which our folks are, well, then you should have a vehicle that was purpose-built for that, you know, that purpose.
Yeah.
What's a usual pizza run like for one of these pizza experts when they leave the store with pizzas? I mean, is it one house or
the majority
neighborhood?
Yeah,
or?
The majority of the time it's going to be one delivery and then you come back.
Really?
If there's a place on the way, we'll do what's called a smart double, but at the end of the day, it's only dispatched if we know we can get it to the customer's house when it's still, you know, tastes good and fresh. But the overwhelming majority is, yeah, one.
So I think with the oven, that would help you do multiple runs.
Well, it's not just about keeping it hot. You know, it's longer it's warm in the box, the stockier it gets. So it's not just, I mean, the quality is still super important to us. That's not going to be second to anything. So, yeah, we could stretch it with this, but we're not going to.
Have you had any interest from any other company to say, hey, can we have this oven technology for our minivan or something where you might be able to use this in a, even from the food service, you know, there's a lot of food vans and food trucks out there. Has anybody kind of looked at this and said, hey, that'd be a good idea? Can, you know,
I don't know. I may have just given away a big secret. Yeah. I mean, it really was when it came, no more battery drain and suddenly within that oven, you know, stuff stays warm. So yeah, I'm actually surprised no one thought of it.
Okay, you had this design contest,
yeah.
But everybody sent in kind of purpose-built vehicles, and you tried to get all the best elements from those different
designs.
And
it was a global, I mean,
The winner was from Slovenia,
yeah,
Iran.
We've got more, actually, entries from outside the country than we did from inside the country.
So who did the final version of this car? Did you work with a designer, or did Roush do it, or how?
Well, the final, what we did for the final design was kind of take the various pieces from our favorites and figure out how to kind of merge that into the Spark platform. Mm-hmm. So it's a little hodgepodge of everything, but we kind of took our top five.
I'm curious if you're surprised how seriously people seem to be taking this. I mean, we had a press event where we had automotive journalists, you know, come and, you know, eat pizza and look at this car. And I mean, I think it was the longest Q&A for that year at an Automotive Press Association event was at least 25 minutes. And, I mean, they were grilling your guys on stage. You know, what's the crashworthiness? What's the how much of a miles per gallon do you lose with the pizza oven? I mean, it was as if you were introducing a car for the everyday consumer. It seems like people are taking this much more seriously than, you know, it's something that you can put in your advertising.
These guys are looking for a career move.
Yeah.
Well, no, you know, to be honest, that was a great day for us. And the reason was because we took it seriously. We took it so seriously, and we wanted to make sure, and the fact that we got that feedback that it wasn't a clown car, that people were really interested in it, meant that we, you know, kind of mission accomplished as far as that was concerned. So it was a great day.
So it is obviously a marketing tool because, I mean, the signage on the car and whatnot, but it's a real functional delivery truck, right? I
mean, yeah. My hope is that what it'll do is, you know, when you think about this as if you're a business owner, right, one is this car versus any car in a regular car topper. Marketing, it's a billboard, basically a billboard. So check. You know, it's what is my marketing cost for a billboard? This is something that a regular car doesn't do. But, you know, what Ronnie showed you when he ran up to it, it's very efficient for a delivery. So you're not taking a bunch of pizzas sitting in the front seat and trying to put them in. I mean, he just runs to the car, puts it in, goes, and then takes it. It's all hands-free until he has to put his hand on the pizza. So my hope there is, second, it shows that it lets us do deliveries faster, keeps the product warmer. And third is the gas mileage is great. And, you know, drivers get reimbursed for mileage. And so, you know, when you think of something that gets good mileage, you know, that has the marketing effect and has the operational impact, my hope is that it's a better business decision for the franchisees, but we'll find out as part of what we're looking at.
Is there a certified pre-owned program when this is out of its life? What happens to it?
Well, it's funny you say that. No, in all our contracts with our franchisees, when this is done, it will get taken apart because obviously we wouldn't want someone driving on the road with Domino's signage that wasn't a Domino's employee.
Look, this is really cool. I think it's a neat little project. I love everything that you're talking about. You know, the Kickstarter or the crowdsource campaign with Local Motors, getting Ken Baker from General Motors, working with Roush. It's a real automotive story, not just a pizza marketing story.
Good.
So, Russell Weiner, the president of Domino's USA, thanks so much for coming on the show. It's been
thanks for having
fascinating.
Me.
And we got some pizza out of it, too, man.
Yeah, it's very delicious.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, real good. Right. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break right now. We're going to be coming back. We're going to be talking with Dr. Data, and we're going to be talking about some of the other news that is going on in the industry. But first, shout out to our friends at Bridgestone. Well, we're back, and I'm still eating.
You're still eating pizza.
But it's time for Dr. Data, and I'm sure he's got a number for us.
Okay, so Carmen, could you please bring the first number up? Now, okay. You're doing distracted hosting by eating pizza while you're sitting here
and I can still talk.
So as you know that distracted driving is a huge problem in the industry that they're trying to address and I was watching a video today from our friend Lauren Fix, who I believe will be on the show next week.
She
makes the point that if you're driving a car for 5 seconds at 55 miles an hour and you're not paying attention, you've gone to a football field, right? Okay, so big problem. So 980%. Okay, so what do we think 980% would represent? And I guarantee you none of you are going to guess it.
So 980% of the people driving on the highway are distracted for more than 5 seconds at a time.
No. If that were the case, we'd have a real serious problem. So what it is that so Congress funds a strategic highway research program. And so this was the second strategic highway research program of naturalistic driving study. And they had Virginia Tech Transportation Institute look at that. And so what they did was they wanted to find out what are some of the problems in terms of distracted driving. And so, Carmen, bring up the second, please. That will increase your crash risk.
So it says increase of crash risk while driving.
So if you're angry, you're crying, you're sad, or you're agitated, this has a huge effect on your ability to drive a car. So it isn't all cell phones and you know, texting and whatnot.
So it's not typing the emoticon to, for angry, sad, crying. That's the risk. It's
that, actually that would, being. That would probably amp it up even more. But I mean, I thought it was astonishing to see. I mean, how much of an effect that has, a measurable effect, on the potential of having a crash.
So it's a 980% increase in risk if you're crying or you're agitated, angry.
So your emotions have a huge role on your
safe
driving.
So we should all sedate ourselves before we get behind the wheel.
That might be a 1,080% problem. But anyway, so I thought it was very interesting to discover.
No kidding. That is pretty good.
It's a real number.
So what else? There's a lot of stuff that's gone on this week. Curious what you guys think of GM, especially really pushing Lyft right now and offering this. I don't want to call it a lease, but it's like if you want to be a Lyft driver, you can now rent a car from GM pretty cheap to become a driver.
Right.
Yeah, it's an interesting sort of you're hitting a lot of things. You're getting people who are in the gig economy acclimated with your brand, which I'm sure those are not the prime GM aficionados at the moment. They're probably looking at other brands. But you also have it gives you sort of the aura of being technologically forward-thinking. It plays into their bigger picture that this is not the traditional GM, that they're doing electric cars and they're doing autonomy and they recognize that everything's changing and they're trying to take a piece of it. And it also, you know, is at least a way to get some revenue from what's happening. I mean, in addition to just watching it happen, they can actually at least make a small amount of money off of it and get their products in the process.
It's interesting, though. So basically, this Express Drive program is that it's like a weekly tab possibility. So $99 for a Lyft driver to get to an Equinox. Right now, it'll just be in Chicago.
Plus insurance.
$99 a week, insurance and maintenance included.
Right. But if you're a Lyft driver and you do 65
runs
cost you nothing.
Right.
And GM still gets paid. I mean, that's the...
How does that happen?
Yeah, I mean, GM still, from what I understand anyway, I mean, somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, GM still is getting paid. They're not giving these cars to Lyft for free.
But General Motors invested $500 million in Lyft, so presumably some of that money's got to be coming out of General Motors somewhere, no?
Probably through opportunity costs. But my understanding is, I was actually asking our GM reporter, David Welch, about this. I'm like, so they don't get paid? And he said, no, it's his understanding. GM's still getting paid. I mean, you're not talking about a high volume. This isn't going to make, it's going to be a rounding error of a rounding error within GM's revenue. But they're not basically drive 65 runs and you get your car's free. Mm-hmm. But it's still just the idea is pretty interesting that these are people who are going to be picking up customers and with this particular vehicle, and they'll probably talk about it. Yeah, you know, you're my 65th ride. This week's free. You know? It's like the conversation.
Uber, their competitor, is signing up 50,000 new drivers a month on a global basis, and Lyft is nowhere near where Uber is. But you know, who knows? Maybe someday. So potentially you could be signing up 50,000 people a month to take your Chevy Equinoxes at $99 a week?
Well, in according to General Motors, that there were 60,000 people in Chicago, where the first part of this program will be launched, who wanted to be Lyft drivers, but they did not have a car that qualified. But then I'm thinking about that. It's okay, 60,000 people. Now, let's just imagine you have 60,000 taxi cabs rolling around. I mean, come on.
It is self-limiting. I mean, you're only, if you don't make any money, you'll stop doing it.
Right.
It's not like you're able to throw things into the market artificially. I was in line to get my new driver's license last week, and there was an Uber driver ahead of me, and to hear her, she actually went through the math of what it was like by the end of the day. You know, she started out with $180. By the time she was done, she was more like $80 to $90 left. And she's like, it's not like I can go out on the town after that, but at least I can eat. I mean, she was just talking about all the things involved in keeping in that process running. So if there's too much competition, it just goes away.
Was she getting a chauffeur's license, or was it just a normal?
She was just taking care of some paperwork. I think it was a title issue or something. Mm-hmm. But she was just talking to people in line, you know, about mm-hmm. what she does and you know, kind of commiserating with them about how hard it was to do this. So it's, you know, there's the reality. This right. is something that sort of self-selects for, you know.
But it's interesting that General Motors is really focusing on doing things like that. And you know, I dare say that 3 or 4 years ago, the whole notion would be
oh, yeah.
not even thought
this was
about.
Not on the radar screen, mm-hmm. not in the least. And that's why I'm so impressed to see GM and Ford. And we got to talk right. now. Ford started a whole new subsidiary.
Smart Mobility LLC.
Yeah. So why do you guys think they went out and created it as a standalone company? Because they're doing all kinds of mobility stuff inside the company and autonomous work and all that. Why create an LLC?
I think it's the same reason anybody takes something and you know, does a IPO of a unit and puts it out there. I mean, you want to call attention to it. You don't want to say it's, you know, it's just a minor thing that it's part of. It's buried over there in R&D at our tech center. It's one of just there's 100 guys of the 10,000 guys who are working on this. It creates sort of an entity, gives it some identity. Same thing, sort of GM has their venture capital arm focused on looking for tech. I mean, everybody's trying to show they have dedicated effort. I mean, in Ford's case, Billy Ford actually has his separate entity that's doing the same kind of work.
It's Fontinalis.
Yeah, I mean, to see the kind of things, the bike system, and there's all this focus on alternatives to cars, which, and you're right, a couple years ago, you bring this up, and the automakers would kind of, like, scoff at you.
They'd look at you like you're a talking goat.
The car is the car, you know, who's going to give up their car? And you can see how quickly that idea has changed as there starts to see, you see how ride sharing and Uber and some of these things are catching on. I mean, there's not 50,000 new drivers signing up because nobody wants to take those cars. I mean, those are 50,000 people driving people who otherwise would have had to get somewhere in a car.
Right.
Or public transportation.
You know, and I think the thing with Ford is, I mean, when we did the thing around CES, as you pointed out, that Mark Field said it's like $5.4 trillion in transportation services on an annual basis. So I think what they're doing at the smart...
Twice as much revenue as the car companies get.
Right. And I think what they're doing is they're saying, okay, we're going to continue to do the work. We're going to continue to do the R&D and the autonomous work and the electric car work and so on and so forth at the mothership. Okay? But we need to have something out there, a satellite, that is totally focused on, you know, not only the hardware and not only the software, but, I mean, even the business processes that would be associated with doing things like that. And you know, they hired a guy from Steelcase.
Actually, they didn't hire the guy from
Steelcase. Well, he was on their board.
He was on the Ford board of directors, mm-hmm. and he's stepping off. What do you guys make of that? He's stepping off the board to go run this LLC startup.
It's probably very cool.
Yeah. You don't get paid as much to be a director as you do to run a unit, probably, either,
right.
if you're gonna make a choice like that.
No, but, I mean, just think about that. I mean, to have the opportunity... Yeah. To be the first guy who is going to be running, you know, this business that has huge potential for Ford. I mean, that'd be a gas.
Well, I thought, you know, Steelcase, very well known commercial furniture maker. He ran that. That got him appointed to the Ford board of directors. I'd have loved to have been at that board meeting. Was he like, hey, I'll step down, give me the job? I mean, to me, it tells me there's got to be a lot of excitement about the potential of something like that.
And it also, it's the biggest risk seems to be that the thinking gets too compartmentalized. It's the think like car guys. And, I mean, the solution is likely to come from someplace you're totally not expecting it. I mean, one of my favorite examples in car sharing is Paris was looking for somebody to do car sharing. And this company, this French company that started out making rolling paper for cigarettes, they ended up realizing that translated well in thin films. It went into batteries, so they had this awesome motor or battery for cars that nobody wanted. So they said, we'll just build a car around our battery, and then we'll lease these for car sharing. And they're a logistics company. They're a conglomerate. They have a logistics company, and they had battery technology. Put those together and had somebody make a car, you know, a Roush make a car for them. And now they're doing Indianapolis. They're in England. They're in Paris. I mean, they're spreading all over the
this
place.
This is the Autolib guys, right?
It wasn't even an auto company at all. It's a
No. That's the name of the car.
Right.
Paris was the first big city to really do it with bicycles, what they called.
But I mean, the fact that they came from cigarette rolling paper.
Oh, yeah. So this is what the zigzag sharing car.
But it's just the idea that that's one of the
back
big
to
players.
The distracted driving thing. They're very mellow. Okay. Well, sort of associated with this whole thing, though, is that so Kelley Blue Book and Auto Trader did a study of Generation Z, which they announced the results of this week. And so this is Generation Z, 0 to age 17. I don't think there's a whole lot of people who are 0 are going to be buying cars. But so you know, they looked
at... two of them at home, by the way. Two Gen Z.
Okay, so they looked at older... They said they put them in two buckets, young Gen Z, which is 12 to 15, and then older Gen Z, which is 16 to 17, okay? And they're saying that by 2020, 23% of the population, $3.2 trillion in buying power. And this, and, I mean, some of the things that came out, I mean, were astonishing to me. We've just been talking about car sharing or you know, getting a ride otherwise. Only 11% want pay-as-you-go, 9% shared ownership, 8% car sharing services to replace ownership.
I don't believe any of these numbers.
I'm sorry. Watching my kids, I have a Gen Y and I have two Gen Z, and they are completely different animals. They've had tech their entire lives. It doesn't impress them. They've had a smartphone they could chew on since their birth, and they're not impressed by technology at all. They're much more pragmatic. They're much more like me, I think, and much more individualistic. And much, I really wouldn't be surprised if especially my youngest, no way I want my own car.
Okay. So 92% plan to own a vehicle. The younger cohort says they'll buy their first vehicle at 18.1 years of age. Yeah, I'd like to see that. And the older ones, because they're a little smarter, because they know what money is more, they'll wait until they're 19.4 years of age. Okay. 97% have a license or plan to get one.
Well, this is where I start to have problems with this data, because we know right now today only 66% of 18-year-olds have a driver's license,
right?
The absolute lowest it's ever been.
It is a different thing. I mean, I am telling you, the difference between those two groups in my house is stunning, and I can see it. I mean, my oldest daughter was not in a hurry at all to get her license. My 13-year-old is counting the days till she's 14 years and 8 months and can get her permit and start, you know.
All right.
Okay.
So, this is interesting. So let me ask you then. So listen to these. 72% would rather have a car for a year than use social media.
I can believe that possibly. They're not. The social media is so like ingrained into what they do, but it's not. Especially my youngest, nowhere near, we take her phone away. It really doesn't make her mad. I take my 18-year-old's phone away and, you know, it's
all hell
breaks
loose, yes. Right, yeah.
So, I mean, in fact, we've learned that taking away electronics from my youngest is not an effective punishment.
All right, how about this one? 63% would rather have a car for a year than buy new clothes.
I mean, I think the clothes are probably less important than the electronics, maybe.
No, because, I mean, as you know, to your point, John, I mean, I looked at those numbers that Umtree had in terms of people with driver's licenses, and, you know, these numbers were up till 2014, and they were saying that the number of 16-year-olds with driver's licenses plummeted from 46% to 24%.
Well, one of the interesting things to keep in mind, though, about this group, the later Gen Y was just destroyed economically. I mean,
Great Recession.
Yeah, in addition to even before the recession, 4 of the previous 5 years had been a downturn. They had not really been in a recovery, in an up cycle for their whole awareness. Even when they weren't having to spend the money, they were in a situation where money was tight, and also that was when smartphones and such became more important. And I mean, we actually did some stories that showed that the purchase funnel shifted, so the smartphone came before the car. I did the math. The first smartphone, a smartphone in adjusted dollars was a little bit more expensive than my first car. So if you get your smartphone, you don't have any money left over to buy a car. And I think that, you know, things have been getting better and better, even though it doesn't feel like it. My younger children probably feel a little less scared when they're just watching the news and stuff. The news has been better the last 3 or 4 years.
Of course, your kids may be anomalies here, because I found some research that Adobe did last year. 79% of Generation Z consumers display symptoms of emotional distress. They probably better not drive.
when kept away from their personal electronic devices?
Maybe my 13-year-old.
Okay.
My 11-year-old, I mean, I'm sorry. My 11-year-old is not...
And this one will doom us, okay?
Let's hear it.
We're going to move on to different careers. The average Gen Zer has the attention span of about 8 seconds.
We should make this show a whole lot shorter.
Yeah, okay, we're done now.
That I'll buy. I will buy the attention span.
But this is fascinating because I saw that in this report out of Kelly Blue Book, and I thought this is very self-serving and all, and I kind of ignored it. But what you're saying, Jeff, is fascinating, that there is a generational change so-called Gen Z.
You were born last century. What do you know? They like to say that to my oldest daughter because she was born in 97 and they were both born in 2000. Like, you were born last century. You know, come on.
Yeah. Your young kids grew up in a world that they didn't know that they wouldn't have a smartphone, right?
But and by the time they buy a car, there probably won't be smartphones. I mean, that's the other thing you have to keep in mind is these things are disappearing as a device. I mean, now they're talking it'll all be sort of, you know, just appear in front of your face and it won't actually be a real device. So I mean,
your drone, your personal drone will holographically project it in front of you.
It'll be just projected on the nearest wall or on your wrist or wherever you look from the little microscopic dot next to your head. And
so just before we finish up this discussion, how did they conduct this survey? I mean, how did they find all these Gen Zers?
Well, see, I was a little curious about that, and I asked them because I was a little curious about the numbers, and, I mean, they went out and found them. But, I mean, the numbers were sort of, I mean, the aggregate number of all of them was 1,193, which is sort of what?
That's a good sample size.
So the younger Gen Z is 620 people. The older Gen Z is 573 people. Mm-hmm. So it's a reasonable sample of people. But all this other information that I found, though, it seems to counter this, which gets back to your point of, it seems a little self-serving. I mean, the thing that surprised me, I mean, your kids like to go. They were saying that a large percentage want to buy at a dealership and not online.
I'm not sure about that. I mean, I think that it all kind of blurred.
Number one.
Only 26% want to buy a car online in the future.
That I'm not sure if this age probably has a good concept of that. Yeah. But I mean, there's this. I mean,
how many 11-year-olds have gone to buy a new car?
There's this new phenomenon, though. Let's, you know, just to give this a caveat. It was a Bloomberg story I think I read today, talking about. I believe it was a Bloomberg story talking about pop-up locations. I apologize if it's not. These pop-up, not really even pop-up, but storefronts where you can go and try on the clothes, but you can't buy the clothes there. The online stores have realized that people still want to touch the clothes. So they have showcases where you can go and try things on and touch it and feel it, but then you get it the traditional online way, so they don't have to have the inventory in the back. But the online places are realizing people want to touch the product. It's not working the way they thought for a lot of products to have it only available
online.
It's
dangerous to buy clothes online. Well, dangerous in the sense that it may not fit right or look.
Amazon started a bookstore. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on. I mean, there's a sense that they recognize that there is a value in having people be able to go to a retail location and touch a physical object, even if they don't take it home with them. Mm-hmm. There is some sense that you want to kind of see it and touch it and do something with it.
Yeah, which is killing companies like Best Buy, since you go to Best Buy, you see it, you touch it, you play with it, and then you go home and you order it on Amazon.
While you're still in the store.
Yeah.
So we should talk a little bit about the Acura or Honda NSX, because the embargo on that car came off today. And though I've not been in the car yet, I did get a chance to go down to the plant last week to see where it's manufactured.
So it's manufactured in Ohio?
Yeah. What do you guys make of this? I mean, here is the Honda Motor Company's most technologically advanced Halo supercar, and they decide to build it in mid-Ohio, not Japan. Why?
I just throwing it out there. The optics are good. I mean, it's especially in the current environment to be seen as, you know, building it here versus importing anything.
Well, for an American audience, but this is a car that's going to be sold all around the world.
The Ohio factory for Honda is probably one of the better in the world, too. I mean, it's just Honda's almost more an American company in every way than they are in Japanese.
And that's what I'm getting at.
And this was a purpose-built facility, right? I mean, this is not...
Actually, what they took is an old shipping building that was... You know, I'm guessing they didn't explain it very well, but I think this is where probably suppliers brought in stuff, and it was kitted and then sent to the big assembly plant down the street.
Right, so it's not like an annex to the Marysville...
Right. No, standalone
plant.
Building,
right. So it's sitting there and well, they've been building Acuras in the United States of various sorts for how many years now? I mean, I think it goes back to the original CL they started building here.
I think you're right.
And, I mean, long time ago. And, you know, I think probably we have the biggest market.
Yeah, probably more NSXs will probably be sold
car,
here.
Number one. Number two, I think that... you know,
especially Acuras.
and if you think about it, I mean, I think, you know, to Jeff's point, I mean, they're becoming an increasingly American company, and I think that they would like to have as much knowledge in this market in terms of process. I mean, that's carbon fiber and aluminum and a very sophisticated hybrid system and you know, very, very complicated car to say, hey, you guys are doing a great job building Accords. Now figure out how to do something like this.
But they're bringing in parts from all over the world. So the electric motors that drive the front wheels, I guess it is, come from Japan. The transmission comes from Japan. The castings come from the U.K. and from Italy. All the machining is done by Cosworth in the U.K., and then everything gets shipped to Ohio. But, you know, as we've talked about on the show before, Honda, 20 years ago, seriously contemplated moving its headquarters to the United States. And I they decided not to, but I don't know that they've completely given up on that idea. And I'm also wondering, do they really see in this century more of a future for their company in North America than they do in Japan?
Japan auto sales. I mean, they're...
And, well, the population's going down,
right.
too. But, I mean, this must have been one hell of an argument at the board level. Maybe argument's not the right word, but it must have been a hell of a discussion at the board to say, no, we're going to put the NSX in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just intrigued by what they did.
Well, you pointed on Autoline Daily today, what is it, 4%... wage difference between U.S. and China?
This is a study from Oxford Economics, which is an affiliate with Oxford University in England. And they say once you adjust for productivity, China's only 4% cheaper.
And then you throw in shipping and things like that. And
voila, you may as well make it here.
Right. So,
and you make a good point because Dave Sullivan from Auto Pacific, I was talking to him, and... he was saying, you know, remember when the decision to make the NSX was made, the yen was like at 80 to the dollar. So instead of being a $160,000 car, it might have ended up being a $200,000 car. And I think he's making a good point there. But I think there was more to the decision process than just what's the exchange rate going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they did kind of basically retool Acura completely in 2014. Right? I mean, said they're going to try and... you know, restart it over, you know, focus it, and try to get the potential that it should have. It was the first Japanese luxury brand here, and it's totally been left in the dust by pretty much everybody else. So it also, from that standpoint, it's good to have sort of that base, you know, that supercar here. I mean, it's
right.
Clearly not important for the bottom line necessarily, but it is sort of since this is the Acura home market. It does.
Isn't it the Acura only market?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
But remember, this is going to be sold as a Honda everywhere else in the world.
Right.
You know, it's only going to be called an Acura in the U.S. Everywhere else, it's a Honda. So it's
still a Honda, and I don't think anyone says, "Oh, the Teslas are built in the U.S. They must stink." I mean, it's not.
Yeah, just think about that. The Teslas are built in a former GM plant in Fremont, California.
There
for goodness'
go.
Sake. I mean, you can do it anywhere.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. But it is kind of cool. One interesting aside. Cosworth, they told me, braggingly, not only machines their engine, machines all the Formula One engines except for one.
Honda?
I said, and Honda's. Honda F1 is the only...
Why is that?
Beats me, but I found it supremely ironic that they've gone to Cosworth, and they're the only ones that Cosworth does not do all the machining for their F1 engine.
Mm-hmm.
just kind of funny. What else? We got time for something else here, I think.
Well, what about the so as BMW is embarking on its second 100 years, they're saying that they're going to have more big luxury SUVs and they're going to have more electric and autonomous vehicles. And these are the two things that they're going to be going forward with and presumably having all those threes, you know, pay the bills as, you know, normal people buy them. What do you guys think about that strategy?
Well, for a luxury car maker, it sure makes sense. I mean, you have the ability to charge what you need to charge for the things that you're going to do. And, I mean, it to say you're going to go to autonomy, and it's just, it's one of those things. It's still far enough out there that it's a really safe thing to say, but it shows that you're thinking ahead again, sort of like what we talked about with Ford and GM. You have to be seen to be playing that, you know, or the optics are bad. I mean, why is Volkswagen suddenly talking about electric vehicles? Because it's, you know, I mean, it's the idea.
Because they're not diesels.
Yeah, I mean, people want to hear that Google and Apple aren't the only ones thinking about the future. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, so and Tesla. I mean, you've sort of had for a couple of years, you had Google, Apple, and Tesla dominating the discussion about the future of the auto industry, and the automakers were mostly just stammering in the background saying, but. And now they're saying, okay, you know, we're going to have the first $35,000 plug-in car, you know, and we're going to have this, and we're going to show our autonomous vehicle. And, mm-hmm. and I mean, let's face it, in terms of the money and technology and the wherewithal to produce a vehicle, it isn't at Apple or Google yet. Right. And to some degree, maybe not even at Tesla, mm-hmm. at the scale and you know, sophistication that we're talking about.
Well, the other thing, too, is, you know, Tesla has decimated the rest of the market for $100,000 cars. I mean, they saw spectacular gains in the U.S. market. That's the only numbers I have access to. They saw spectacular gains in sales last year. Whereas if you look at all the other luxury cars in the roughly $100,000 range combined, their sales went down by the same amount that Tesla's sales went up. And Tesla in the U.S. already outsells Jaguar, for example. So I think the writing's on the wall that, hey, if you're a car company and you play in that segment, you better do something, mm-hmm. because these guys have just put out one model. Okay, now they just got the X out, but you better have something to compete.
The invitation just went out this week to see the Model 3.
Yeah, I didn't get my invitation.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for mine.
Well, the I...
Jeff's got his.
Yeah. The i3 and the i8, you know, BMW has already kind of put some pretty serious, at least, you know, entries into the space, and they talk about how popular they are. Mm-hmm. I think it just is the price of competition now. Is you got to be seen as playing there.
But, you know, here we got a picture of the BMW i8. It's not pure electric. It's
a hybrid.
It's a hybrid. But, you know, God, is it beautiful. It's a gorgeous car.
And I kind of wonder, you know, I mean, you still, I know Tesla's going for the electric play, but, you know, that's the $100,000 car. Even the $35,000 car, you better have that mileage rock solid. There's still going to be those people. I mean, I find it really interesting that Chrysler's finally doing a hybrid minivan. I know it's boring to be excited by a minivan, but I'm more interested in the plug-in Chrysler minivan than I am in a lot of the other vehicles that are out there, because just 30 miles in a minivan on a charge, that's, you know, in my house, that's
more than enough, right?
I mean, I can envision not putting gasoline in it for weeks.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, going back to the BMW i8, gorgeous car, it's not selling. I'm sorry. It just is not selling. It's not like people said, oh, forget Tesla. This is what I want. It hasn't happened. So Tesla is having no problem selling cars at that price range. BMW is really struggling with the i8. That's how I read it. Maybe they'll have a different story.
Is that because of the exclusivity that it's associated with Tesla versus, you know, the kid down the street has a 3 Series and, you know, my dentist is driving a 5 Series and I'm going to get an i8?
Well, I think part of the problems is it's real hard to get in and out of the i8. You know, God forbid you have a date with a dress on. She's not going to want to get in and out of that car.
Well, and, she's a movie star. And that might be TMZ.
Okay, yeah. But, and then again, it's a hybrid. It's not electric. Yeah. And it's it doesn't drive like a Tesla does. It doesn't have that instant torque reaction. It's not a slow car by any stretch, but it just doesn't have that the snappiness that a Tesla does. I don't know if that's all it, but the point is BMW studied the segment very, very carefully, put their whole plan together, put it out on the market, and Tesla's just stomping on them. Damn. So they got to do something else.
Damn, it's still the messaging. I mean, it's you got to say the thing that says I see this is happening and I'm going to respond to it. Just wait. Mm-hmm. You'll see. I mean, it's like
well, we should probably wrap this up here, but so what'd you guys think of the pizza car before we go?
I just think it's a really interesting idea, and the level of seriousness was what surprised me the most. I mean, originally when I first heard about this, I thought, oh, you know, this would be cute. And then, you know, he sits down and he talks about it, and I mean, years of study. I mean, I don't know if it was millions, but significant amounts of money.
Oh, to do something like this,
yeah.
You're talking millions.
But I mean, in terms of they really spent a lot of time on it, and for you know, it beyond just it could have easily just put some stickers on a car and
I mean, and the thing is I mean, in how serious they were about how this is something that is going to be used by just regular franchisees who are delivering pizzas. I mean, it's not about like, oh, we're going to take this to the state fair and then we're going to
put it in the parade.
This is not the Oscar Mayer Wiener mobile that just drives around.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, and that I think is rather remarkable. And I think this, you know, you and I have been writing about manufacturing for a long, long, long time. And it has always occurred to me that the promise used to be that there would be more purpose-built vehicles, more specialized vehicles, and it's never gone that way, right? I mean, it's all gone to volume. They're just looking for how can you make many, 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 and not, you know, individual things. And I just think that this is great, and maybe that goes back to the local motors thing. And, you know, to be able to say, okay, let's actually use the technology and make a few of these things, and then call it good, right? Mm-hmm. And then move on to something else. And because I think he seemed to indicate that, you know, they're thinking about part two.
Yeah, no, I think they're very much thinking about part two. What I liked about the story, and I talked to a couple of the Roush guys when they came and delivered the car to put it in the studio here. And, I mean, they've approached this like they would approach a program with any of the major car makers. And it was kind of cool to listen to them talk about, oh, yeah, these marketing guys come in and they say, hey, we're going to do this and this and this. And then they say, the Roush guys say, yeah, well, do you realize what the tooling cost for this is going to be? And do you realize what the tooling cost for that's going to be? And then they said, all of a sudden, the Domino's people go, oh, doing a car is way harder than we thought. And that's why they had to scale back their plans to come out with this. I think they've done a great job, though. I'll bet this works. And I'll bet that other competitors are going to be forced to follow suit.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Well, Gary, let's do this again next week. Let's do it in New York, though.
Yeah, that'd
there's an auto
nice.
Show going on in the Big Apple next week. So we'll do it then.
Okay.
Jeff Green, great for having you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Cool. And, of course, I want to thank all of you who have been tuning in.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires. Your journey, our passion.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday afternoons. Get your daily fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.